It's Learning to Listen with Quinn, Naomi, and Charlie.
Yes. Welcome to Learning to Listen, aka L2L Podcast. We are here to listen to albums, break them down, talk about them, learn about them, learn about people, learn about the people that make the albums, all that sort of stuff. Right now, we are just wrapping up our three-part mini-series called Derp Nostalgia. I don't know. Have I been doing it sing-songy like that the whole time?
Yes, you have. I think the last couple of times were more sing-songy.
Well, okay. I'm sorry. I've been drinking all day. I'm tired.
Don't apologize. Lean into it.
Look, leaning into it, I got this write-up. It goes like this. Tastes evolve. Circumstances change. We move on and leave things behind. Things that sometimes come back to haunt us. This is Derp Nostalgia.
I knew you weren't reciting Bush lyrics because that made sense.
That's right. We're talking all about Bush today. The album is Razorblade Suitcase, the 1996 grunge album. But before we do that, patreon.com/learningtolisten. That's where you can help us out financially. You know, it costs a few dollars. I'm going to level with you guys, okay? Charlie's been eating a lot of fast food lately.
Two times.
We just need a help. We just need a helping hand to keep Charlie in horsey sauce.
I saved that and put it in my fridge. I was like, "You're that's the good stuff."
Yeah, and for a small donation a month, not only do you get bonus content, you get the episodes early, but you keep Charlie from
keep me in the horsey sauce.
Yeah, keep him in the horsey sauce and keep him out of the blow. That's.
He's on the sauce again. It's
one of the other folks. Okay, patreon.com/learningtolisten. Yes, like we've been talking already, Charlie, DJ Charlie Scream is here with the hot drops.
Wow. Wow.
Oh, that was a whole plethora.
Just press a whole bunch of buttons, see what happens.
That was a cornucopia of drops. Naomi's over there, our 90s nostalgia expert. Yeah, there you are. All right, so this one is your pick. We did my pick. My pick was Nerf Herder's debut album. Mm-hmm. And we got a fair to middling response on that. Mm-hmm. Then Charlie did Power Man 5000, Tonight the Stars Revolt. I less favorable response, I would think, overall.
Nah, I still like it. 1 out of 3 co-hosts agree.
I think you guys like Nerf Herder more than I did, but...
I also probably like that.
But I did catch myself listening to it again. So,
hey, there you go.
I got more nostalgic. That's how they get you, though. Anyway, this album, this is Naomi's pick. The album is Bush, or otherwise known as Bush X, if you are Canadian. Hmm. Not anymore. I think they've been allowed to drop that moniker, but at some point...
Oh, yeah, they settled that. They settled that probably way back then, probably near the end of the 90s.
I do remember this album having an X on it when I first saw it in the 90s. But the album is Razorblade Suitcase, second studio album by English rock band Bush, released in November 1996. Follow-up to their huge debut album, 16 Stone, in 1994, produced by Steve Albini. And it debuted at number one. It was a huge album.
Hot.
It had more than a couple of singles that made its way off this record, but it kind of came out to generally mixed and or negative reviews for the most part. So I don't know how long it stayed up in the top 40, but I do remember a lot of people owning this record and hearing a lot of spins of this thing back in the day. So Naomi, this was your pick, and the whole point of Derp Nostalgia was to maybe pick an album that you were into at one point, you remember liking it, thinking of it favorably, but now that there's some time and distance between then and now, if somebody were to be like, hey, pick something out of your CD wallet to put on at a party, you might cringe and go, yikes, maybe not this one, move on. So.
Yeah, I would say, first of all, I got into this band because I do think that that debut album, 16 Stone, was quite good. It's still something I would throw on at any time. I really liked the songwriting on the first album, and they had a lot of hits off of it. It felt like lyrically even came together better, you know, like it was understandable. some of the songs I even found relatable. But then, so I was starting to really be into this band. So then they put out the next album, Razorblade Suitcase. The big single comes out, Swallowed. This is the lead off single off that album. It's getting huge, much music, heavy rotation. And it's got actually a really cool like chord progression. And I really like the musicality of the song Swallowed. I thought it was great. So I'm like, great, this is going to be a great album. I'm going to be buying it anyways because I like these guys. Heard that one. Then the next single was called Greedy Fly. I was really into that one too. But the rest of the album just seemed like a bunch of monotonous filler that didn't make any sense. And actually, when I did my latest listen to it this week, I found it irritating. Like, it actually grated on my nerves. I had to keep changing from song to song because I would be like, oh, this is fucking annoying.
Yeah, okay. So, obviously, I think we're all pretty familiar with this one, right? Like, I heard this back in the day. I don't remember, like, I never bought it. I heard the songs on the radio for sure. I know friends had it. I don't know like where I sat down and listened to the whole album through, but I'm sure hanging out with friends, it went on once or twice. Charlie, I'm sure you must be somewhat familiar with this.
I know the singles. I don't know. I can't say that I've listened to too much of it otherwise. I definitely listened to 16 Stone more. Mm. Yeah, that's basically it. I know the singles.
Yep.
Okay. So, yeah. First intentional listen through in like how long ago was 1996 now?
Almost. It's like 25 years since this album came out.
Yeah, so first intentional listen in 25 years. And you know, my thoughts of the album when it came out is I wasn't into it then. It didn't bug me. I didn't hate it. I just was mostly indifferent to it. I remember for me, my Bush experience was that from the first album, Glycerin became kind of like a campfire song, or you were like, you know, people learning to play guitar, which I was learning to play guitar.
Four chords, easy song.
Totally. Yeah, like really easy to learn. A lot of people played Glycerin a lot. You know, not a ton of their other songs really made it to that kind of like, you know, pick up an acoustic guitar and strum it. I'm sure there was a few more, but that was the one. So I would say my friends were more into Bush. I do remember kind of liking Machine Head off the first record.
Mm-hmm.
That's about it. And then this album came out, and by that point, I feel like I was moving away from that idea of alternative rock music.
You mentioned the word grunge earlier.
Yeah, well, this is definitely a grunge record, right?
Well, that's something that actually surprised me too, because if you would have asked me, I would have just said alt rock, you know. But then I was reading up a bit about it, and it was like, this is one of the last of the '90s grunge albums, and I was like, oh, I didn't realize
produced by Steve Albini. Right.
Yeah.
Same guy who did, you know, In Utero.
Okay, so here's the thing about that. Here's the thing for me is that I remember somewhat of Bush that they were like, stop comparing us to Nirvana. We're not like Nirvana. We're not Nirvana. But let's get the guy who, you know, the best way to show you that we're not Nirvana is get the guy who produces Nirvana to produce our album.
Yeah, and sound exactly like Nirvana.
Sound exactly like Nirvana.
Yeah.
Like quiet, Nirvana Light.
Quiet versus loud choruses.
Yeah.
Right. And Nirvana didn't invent that either. You know, like I'm pretty sure Kurt even admitted that he got a lot of that idea of dynamics from like the Pixies. Right. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like that, I think I made this in my notes and I made it down in my notes, but I think I'll jump to it already. I think it's not maybe just this album, but maybe this like 96, this kind of sound, other bands that were doing this thing at the time. You know, this is what killed grunge, right? Like, it was officially dead when this album came out.
You add a little bit more water, keep watering it down, keep radio-friendlying it.
The thing with the grunge scene that people kind of forget is that play, even though there's similarities aesthetically, sonically, between bands, but the core bands of that Seattle grunge sound, or scene, I should say, weren't copy, like, you know, cookie cutter copies of each other. I mean, yeah, they played like a lot of, you know, grungy, crunchy, wet, distorted power chords, you know, big guitar rock, big drums, maybe like angsty, you know, lead singer, whatever. But, you know, Soundgarden had a distinct sound. Pearl Jam had a distinct sound.
The four core grunge bands were all very different from each other.
Yeah, and then the kind of the fallout bands of that era genre, like, you know, there was still a uniqueness. This, I feel like, is the fallout of record labels and bands trying to, like, you know, like get some of that magic and be like, oh, we, like, yeah, like Charlie's saying, it's hilarious that you're like, we're not Nirvana, stop comparing us to Nirvana. So let's get the producer who makes Nirvana sound like Nirvana.
Get the Nirvana guy.
Let's make our song sound just like Nirvana songs. And the only difference you have is you have Gavin Ronsdale, who's just, you know, he's kind of got a bit of a like a, isn't, it's nothing wrong with his voice. His voice is fine, but his emoting is really just kind of one note. Like,
yeah. His he doesn't have much of a range. He kind of just sings in the same, like, yeah, it's almost half of an, half of a.
Yeah. Like he can change the volume of his voice. But his range is limited and he doesn't emote differently, you know.
Sure.
He has one emotion and otherwise he just sings loud or quiet. Right. And so I get it. By the time you heard this record, even if you were kind of into it, like if you liked, you know, loud guitar rock at the time, which, you know, God bless you, like I get it. But otherwise, if you weren't diehard, you'd just be bored, right?
Right. Like, I think so.
I feel like a lot of people, even people who bought this album on the strength of the single or two, got it home, spun it a few times, and then it just became background noise, you know?
Yeah. Like, I get that. And I feel like actually now that I think about it a little bit, there would have been a point where I would have wanted to get into this album. I would have been like, okay, well, let's give this a fair shake and try it out. And I'm sure I listened to it. But none of it stuck, you know. It was just like, two songs are good. I like two songs for sure, but like after that, it was just kind of like, yeah, it's forgettable, you know.
Well, by this point too, you've got, you know, Dave Grohl putting out the Foo Fighters stuff, and you know he's doing a new, fresh take on the old format instead of just going formulaic,
right?
Right. He's like, yeah, let's diversify, you know, the sound a bit, right? And like his, like he's what's the word I'm looking for, you know, that was prosperous for him. He's still around, he's still fairly relevant, you know, weirdly. Yeah. Like
he's one of the last relevant rock stars there are, to be honest.
Maybe I don't know, like I'm just not all that plugged into what kids consider rock stars these days, right? I know some of the big names out there.
Post Malone.
Yeah, I'm Post Malone, sure. Billie Eilish, is she a rock star?
I don't think the word rock star is used anymore.
Yeah. I mean, star, yeah, like pop star or something, yeah, but like,
yeah,
not a rock star.
Yeah,
like rock and roll
star. Yeah, rock and roll.
Yeah, we don't like have guitar those. Rock. Like when you guys say rock star, you're thinking like guys slinging guitars down to their knees, playing power chords, and like you know, shagging hair in their eyes, and like, I mean, yeah, like I'm sure. In the 80s, at some point, you know, there was people saying the same thing, though, like going like, rock stars are dead.
Yeah, fair enough.
There's no such, it's just, you know, this is just pop music. And now we're like, what are you talking about? The Cars rock, you know?
Right. Yeah. Fair enough.
Blondie rocks. So, yeah, I don't know. It's weird to get into like the semantics of all that. But as far as guitar rock goes, like, you know, I don't think there's a ton of just very guitar rock, like guitar oriented music on the radio these days.
Sure.
You know, there was a bit of a, you know, in the early 2000s, there's a bit of a revival, you know, obviously White Stripes, The Hives, The Strokes.
The Band.
Yeah, a lot of that stuff. And then, you know, you had your ironic, you know, like disco bands, and you know, even emo, screamo, all that stuff, like that was, I thought that's all guitar centric, right?
My Chemical Romance time.
Totally. But I'm not surprised that by the time this album came out, people were like ready for the teen idol pop star bands, you know, whatever, like
right.
that, you know, we're like, all right, like we got over it. You know, we're just like, man, the guy who's just upset about what, you know, like, and yeah, I think, that's where I think really, you know, Bush really falls apart for me compared to other bands that maybe were doing the same thing at the same time, but have had a little bit more longevity, or even the post-grunge so-called bands, like mm-hmm. where people started going like, fuck it, you know, whatever, I'll listen to Nickelback.
Yeah, I kind of figured they were like in the in-between of grunge and post-grunge. If there was,
yeah, but
that was kind of what they were.
But and then you touched on it a little bit earlier, Naomi, and I think my biggest problem with Bush back then, and all I did was reaffirm today when I listened to this album. I hate Gavin Rossdale's lyrics. I hate them. I like, what are they about? Like, yeah. Okay, I totally understand vague metaphor working in music to paint a yeah. picture, or like Nirvana songs aren't always easy to decode. You know, Kurt mm-hmm. really liked using metaphor. He really liked juxtaposition. So he'd be like, you know, I don't know if he thought there was some irony in that idea or whatever. But when I listen to a Nirvana song, even if I don't know on a surface level what the song is about, at least it's emoting something, right? That I feel like I get an impression of, you know, maybe this is expression more than it's like a coherent idea. Mm-hmm. But with Bush and Gavin Rossdale's lyrics, I don't think they mean anything.
Well,
yeah,
I have a thought about that, at least for this album, because I read reading about this. I saw this little nugget of information that Gavin Rossdale wrote most of the songs for Razorblade Suitcase in under 1 month. So he's yeah. just like, get through it, get another song, more lyrics, more anything
I
coming out on paper.
I think he's just sitting there trying to find big words to use and smash them together.
Well, this is their
really
second
deep.
Album, right?
Yeah.
So it's their big follow-up. So there's all the pressure for the big follow-up. You got to get
Always.
That follow-up out. You can take forever to put out your first album. But for that follow-up, you got to get it out and get it out fast. So I can definitely, that makes sense to me why he would just, well, I mean, I'm not championing it or anything, but like that's makes
no,
sense
but
to me.
It's giving reasoning. It's giving reasoning to why it is like this.
Yeah.
And if I listen to the first album, I think a lot of the songs actually had cohesive themes. There's one song that stands out
Machine
to me
Head.
Of the first album called Testosterone. It's basically talking about some guy who just thinks he's like the biggest macho dude around. And then he literally says, I guess you could say I'm real full of it. You know,
okay.
I think I can do this. I can do that, but I'm actually full of shit. That song made sense. Whereas a song like, okay, for instance, on Razorblade Suitcase, you have a song called Mouth, where I feel like the overall message of the song is that this is about a woman or a significant other who's basically heartless and cold and just like sticking you with the, you know, with stabbing you in the heart. That's what I get out of it, right?
That's so funny because... Now, I did not dive into the lyrics that much, but that of all the songs to me was like, and my wife mentioned, she was like, this is the sexiest song on the album just because of its pacing and it's like slow grind of a song, you know?
Yeah.
But not paying attention to the content in the lyrics that just sounded like, you know, then they're talking about, you know, they're saying he's saying mouth a lot, right?
Well, so, okay, this is
the core. I just want to finish my thought.
Yeah, go ahead.
The chorus of the song says, all your mental armor drags me down. Nothing hurts like your mouth. And your wife is right about the sexy grind to this song, because later on, like a year later, they came out with like a remix album called Deconstructed, where they released a video to this song. And it was actually really good. When they changed up the tune, but the version of it on this album sucks, in my opinion. Go ahead, Quinn. I'm sorry, I had to finish.
No, I was going to say it's funny that you guys bring up Mouth, because I made a note of it here. I was like, I think Mouth is the only song in this album that might actually be about something. You know, like I got an idea listening to it. I was like, oh, this is about arguing and like how, you know, sometimes you go for the hurtful words. You know, and I'm like, okay, like nothing hurts like your mouth. And I'm like, okay, like I get that, but I don't understand what Screaming Daisies from 14 miles away. I found my own time, found it all today. What the fuck does that mean?
What are Screaming Daisies? Is that,
I don't get the metaphor
there at all.
No, I don't understand. Like, okay, the metaphor, like sometimes the metaphors make sense, but just out of context, like two or three words that make, like the name of the album, Razorblade Suitcase. I'm like, okay, I get it. He's talking about emotional baggage and that it hurts to carry or something. You want to pick it up and it's full of razor blade. You know, I'm like,
you're going to get cut.
You're going to get cut. It's a lyric in a song, but like when you hear it in the song, and I don't even remember what fucking song it's from. Yeah. What is it from? Synapse or something like that?
Sure.
Song. Then you hear it in the song and you're like, what does this have to do with anything? I don't understand anything here.
The biggest song on the album, best and the first single and the best song musically on the album, in my opinion, is Swallowed. And I'm trying to decipher what it means. And it kind of sounds like somebody who's just feeling gutted.
Blowjobs, right?
That's what I was hoping. But it's actually more about like being gutted, I think, by something. But like, it doesn't make sense. There's some cool lyrics, but only phrase by phrase. When you string them all together, what the fuck is he saying? I like in the middle of a world on a fish hook, you're the wave.
You're the wave, you're the wave, you're the wave.
So you're saying you're the wave that comes and knocks me off the fish hook? But what does it have to do with anything else they're talking about?
Or he's stuck on a fish hook and he's just trapped in the waves. And maybe it's just a bunch of metaphors about being trapped or caught.
Yeah, it goes with I'm with everyone and yet not. Got to get away from here. I miss the one that I love a lot. Okay.
Yeah, well, I mean, that seems like that's more literal, but what does it have to do with anything? I mean, maybe he can sit down and tell us what all these songs are about.
Well, sure he can, but like, I feel like he probably wrote a lot of this album sort of stream of consciousness or whatever.
Yeah.
And just like, in the moment, he was like, oh, I'm thinking about this, and boom, go. He wrote it down, and that's the song right there, which then, makes sense to him. He can deconstruct it in his own head or, you know, out loud or whatever it is, but, you know, it just doesn't necessarily. I mean, but that's like
when they get
abstract
lazy.
Painting, right? You know, you can look at something, and you're like, this doesn't make any damn sense to me. But to a guy, someone, the right person, they're like, this is everything.
But then they get lazy, and then they say, oh, well, you know, it means something different to every listener. I want you to tell me what you think it means. It's like, no, just tell me what it fucking means.
You just woke up, rolled out of bed, and wrote some bullshit on a paper, recorded it in the studio, and boom, now it's a single.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay, so like I already made the point about, I mean, you can blame a lot of bands for having that kind of writing style, mm-hmm. or maybe it's intentional, but the difference is at least can you convey some emotion, you know, can you paint like a picture, even if it's not a cohesive picture, but like, you know, mm-hmm. yeah, like sure, there's a place for absurdist, you know, there's a place for impressionist, there's a place for all of that to make you think. I get it, but then when your performance is so flat, you can't get away with these like nonsense lyrics. It just feels like he found words that rhymed and rested on the laurels of these G's. Like they sound metaphorical enough that you can attach your own meaning to them. Mm-hmm. But you know, one of the criticisms I heard of this album, back in the day, and then I read it up now too, is that, it doesn't have any hooks. It's not hooky. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, listening to it today, I'm like, no, it's not that it's not hooky. It's got hooky riffs.
Yeah.
You know, it's got turns of phrase that he repeats like he's trying to write a hook. It's just that the lyrics aren't memorable enough.
So what you're saying is there's hooks, they're just not necessarily good hooks.
Yeah. Yeah, you should, like, maybe you can get away with mumbo jumbo like metaphors in the verses, if at least if you're like Machine Head. Okay, I don't know if that song is necessarily about a motorcycle, but I assume it's about a motorcycle or a racing of some kind.
It's better,
right,
than the rest.
You know it might even actually be about drugs on a deeper level. Maybe that's what it is, right? Like maybe it's like this, I'm revved up and like I feel like, you know, I'm racing, I'm a machine head. All right, green to red, whatever. But like, okay, I don't know if that song deep or not, but at least it's got a memorable hook.
Right.
I can hear that song once and just get an impression of it.
Totally.
Right? And, you know, there's nothing, not a song on this album, not one that's like that. Yeah, and then like the big single Swallowed. Like, yeah, Swallow. What's the second word? Swallowed. Might as well be Swallowed again.
Still followed? Also Swallowed.
Hollowed?
Followed. Followed.
Followed.
I'm with everyone and yet
Marshmallowed.
Not.
I don't know what that means.
But don't you like the musicality of that song though? Do you find it catchy in any way? Because I think the verse is brilliantly written melodically.
Okay. If we're gonna get into the music, here's one thing I noticed. And I streamed it. I don't have a copy of this record. I streamed it off of Apple Music because I use Apple Music for my research so that it doesn't screw up my Spotify algorithm. You know, I don't want a bunch of suggestions for fucking Power Man 5000 and Bush, you know.
Yeah, you do.
No, I definitely don't. So the version that is on Apple Music is like this apparently like 20th or 25th anniversary remastered version. And it sounds really good. I don't remember this album sounding good. And I think I know why. I think that at the time that this album came out, it was right in the middle of like what, you know, sometimes engineers and producers and people in the business will call like the volume wars. Where the idea was just getting the songs to sound louder and louder on the radio and in like the digital sphere.
So compression.
It feels like as this got remastered and probably with higher bit rates for, you know, not just music in general, like being able to master the music digitally with higher bit rates, but also stream it at higher bit rates. It takes all that compression off and the guitars sound good. The drums sound good. The Steve Albini like production sounds good. It sounds like bands, you know, like just playing off the floor in the studio. I mean, you know, there's obviously some affectation on there because, you know, there's chorus and echo effects and whatnot, you know, especially on the vocals. But yeah, I was actually pleasantly surprised. I put it in, and for, you know, a handful of songs, even though I was going like, God damn, like, these lyrics are terrible, I was genuinely enjoying the guitar rock. I was like, yeah, this isn't the worst thing I've ever heard. I kind of was pleasantly surprised. Like, I thought I might hate it, but but I think it's the remaster version, because if I remember listening to this album in the 90s, I remember wishing the guitars sounded like real guitars and not just like just this, you know, like flat line of like everything sounded like at the time because of all just the compression. Yeah. I don't know. And musicality, I wasn't blown away per se, you know, but I was also like, they're trying some stuff out here. This isn't like sonically displeasing at all. Like, it's like, you know, there weren't like shredding guitar solos or, you know, crazy time signatures, but just as far as like just wall of sound, like in your face, like, yeah, that like in utero Nirvana. Like,
I was going to say, it's funny what the one thing, because oftentimes, you know, I'll listen to an album, like I was listening to Nerf Herder and I was like, oh, I should listen to some Weezer after this. I was listening to this and I was like, oh man, I should listen to some Silverchair after this.
Oh yeah.
Oh.
Just sonically,
I can
like
see that. Yeah.
Especially the like the later, like the second, third, like those, not the Frog Stomp, but the later.
Frog Stomp's obviously the best one, but like I really liked Freak Show has a special place in my heart.
Well, I just
is that
mean
the one with that song, the year 2000 or whatever.
No, that was the next one after that. Yeah.
Oh yeah, that is basically the exact same riff as Backstreet's Back. they're both bump ba da 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 da. We'll make it up to you in the year 2000. Everybody,
there's a mashup.
If nobody's matched that up,
that's got to exist, right?
Wait. By the way,
goals.
I've
gonna be the next Give 'Em Hell Boy single.
Well, I think next podcast, Naomi, you're gonna be moving. So I think it's just gonna be me and Charlie. I'll give away the spoilers right now. I think I want to do mashups, Charlie. Let's do a staff pick of mashups.
Let's do it.
All right, cool. I'm in.
I got some ideas already.
Okay, but you were just saying back to this. I know you do. That's why I said let's do it, because I have some ideas too. Back to this. So you're saying like this made you go like, oh yeah, Silverchair, whatever. Was it because you were like, was it the sound? I don't know. Like, did you notice anything about the tone? Did you like the guitar tone?
Yeah, I was thinking about the guitar tone, and I'm not exactly sure how I feel about it. Like, there's a part of me that likes it. I like the whole the wave of sound idea, right? Like the whole it just blasts you. I think I started thinking about Silverchair, and I'm not trying to drag on Bush, but like, because I could get that kind of tone and that kind of crunch and that kind of, you know, loudness, but songs I might like better. You know, like to give it its props, if Swallowed came on the, you know, whatever radio station or internet radio or whatever, satellite radio, I would listen to it. You know, I'm not like, get it out of here, I hate this shit, right? And I'd be like, no, that's cool, that reminds me of a time and place, right?
Yeah.
But it also makes
me think, Swallowed.
Yeah, exactly. Like, only really the hits off of this album really made an impression on me.
Mm-hmm.
I
wonder why they were chosen as the singles.
Yeah. They were the hookier of the...
They were obvious?
Yeah, obvious, I think so. Choices? You could tell, you know, when you put them in a lineup. And then later on, and I found near the end of the album, it really, things started to really seem to drag on for me, because the songs get slower and slower. Oh, yeah. And then
it gets,
they're
really
like,
boring.
And we've got this quartet that's going to hang out and play.
Well,
some
and then
stuff
they basically,
while, which is fine. I like that, but
I like,
well, it's basically the
anything.
Sequel to Glycerin.
Mm-hmm.
That's what is it? Straight No Chaser.
Yeah. Not a bad tune.
Actually,
that would be my number three favorite song on the album.
I feel like all the punches at the beginning of the album, and then they're just kind of like, they run out of energy, and I ran out of energy listening to it.
Yeah, I would say the same thing. By the time you hit Straight No Chaser, I appreciate it, like, you know, okay, here, let's throw a ballad in the middle of the album. You need peaks and valleys, and I don't mean that like hits and misses. I mean that as like, you know, let's go on a little journey here, right? But it never picks momentum up again after that. And but the second half, the back half of the album, if this was a vinyl, I don't know if I'd ever bother.
You wouldn't flip it over,
flipping it over to side B.
Yeah,
because the whole side B is just,
I think,
boring.
The very last song, Distant Voices, it gets to a point where it actually literally stops, but there's still a minute and some left in the track. Because then there's a little at the end where you're like, okay, I guess, are you good now? If you've lasted like an hour and some, are you guys finally out of go juice?
Yeah,
it makes
you
wonder what they were going for to begin with. Like, what was the goal there?
Mm-hmm. I missed the hidden track because I got excited. Like, I jumped the gun and was like, oh, album over, earbuds out.
I don't even think it's not even a hidden track. It's just a finishing of the thought of the last song. It just swells up and then it's done.
Yeah,
and I was
surprised
to hear a minute, there's a minute and a half left. Okay, cool. They're going to do a hidden track kind of thing. And they're just like, a big musical sigh.
Yeah, I just was surprised to still hear like sound coming out of my earbuds. And I was just like, do I need to listen to the rest of this? And then I looked at the thing and I was like, you know, there's 30 seconds left. I can't really be missing much, and I never put it back in. But yeah, the back half of the album is where it really, really shows that it was, you know, the ideas in this band are very limited. It's very repetitive. It's very middle of the road. It's very like, yeah, there's just nothing. Even if there was at least guitar hooks in the first half of the record, there's nothing like that on the second half of the record. Nothing. I don't know if anything on the second half of the record got released as a single at all. I don't know.
I believe there might have been three singles, but I can only remember the two.
Well, Swallow, Greedy Fly, and Mouth, right?
Yeah, I guess Mouth was a single but it was taken off of the third remix album though as the single.
Yeah, so okay, so I got it up here. Swallowed was the first one, Greedy Fly was the second one, Bone Driven and Cold Contagious were three and four, but I don't know how well.
Bone Driven.
they didn't really chart.
That's the second last one, yeah.
Bone Driven. Yeah, it's like a really boring song.
Yeah, it didn't it barely rung a bell, like, other than the vague memory of hearing something once or twice through in the past. Yeah, the only songs I really was very familiar with were all the first half of the record songs for sure.
Now, a question I would ask to both of you guys, because I don't think I've ever heard you guys say anything like this before, but have you ever just gotten into a musical artist just because you thought they were hot and then tried to justify liking their music somehow, but you really knew deep down you just thought they were hot?
Okay.
Well, a crush on them or something.
Now, I'm glad you brought this up because this was in my notes to bring up.
I actually, when I look back at it, with the exception of 16 Stone, which was good, I honestly think that the only reason I was as into the Bush as I was is because I had a crush on Gavin Rossdale, and that's pretty much the majority of it.
Sure.
I thought he was more talented and such, and somehow justified some of the irritating qualities of his voice with how good he looked.
He is a handsome man. He was a handsome man. I feel like he's holding up in the looks department these days, even.
Oh, right? Yeah. I think he's been aging well. Yeah.
Yeah. And I wonder if, like, part of the reason that these guys did come to some prominence was because, like, I no idea what anybody else in this band looks like. I don't know their names. I have no idea. But I know Gavin Rossdale.
They're all right looking blokes. But I mean, like, honestly, Gavin, I think, brought the huge amount of attention to the band from the female population with his looks. He did a cover for Rolling Stone where he's sitting there shirtless on a bed.
Yes.
Unmade bed, looking all pouty.
And I remember all of this.
Millions of copies of that cover.
Of course.
Now,
here's the thing. If there was a female artist that I was just into for the looks, mm-hmm. I don't know if I would buy the record or try and justify buying the record. I would have bought the Rolling Stone cover, you know, that sort of thing. But I couldn't. I don't know. I'm trying to think if there was.
I got one. Yeah. But it's cool. It kind of segues because it's also a bit of personality, too. So I guess it's not just for looks. Iggy Azalea's first EP. I saw her on a British quiz show, and I was like, who the fuck is this? And then I caught her first EP, and I was like, this is great. So, I mean, but it was also her attitude, not just her looks. So,
so there was a bit of a package deal there for you. Yeah. But did you actually start listening to her music because you thought she was
first? And I still would, I'll defend her first EP was awesome. I loved it.
I think she's good, yeah.
Even some of her other stuff, but I haven't kept up with her as much, but like her early work was great.
Maybe Shania Twain. Maybe Shania Twain. Not because, like, I thought her music was bad and tried to justify that it was good, but also just because, you know, being a young man, if I got caught watching a Shania Twain video. People are, you know, or like, just, you know, that could, the kind of ribbing you get from your friends when they're like, hey there, any man of mine,
you're
like,
them.
She's smoking hot. And they're like, yeah, you can hit mute. I'm like, oh, good point.
Yeah.
You know,
I like her music though,
but I've come around. I'm more of a Shania Twain fan now than, you know, it just wasn't cool. It wasn't cool.
I always liked her music, but yeah, she's gorgeous. I'd have a girl crush on her.
Girl crush. I don't know. God, maybe Tattoo. Do you remember Tattoo?
Yes.
The two Russian...
Lesbians? Yeah.
For 10 lesbians making out in the rain?
I remember that.
It was all shtick, wasn't it?
You know, this isn't the day, though, too, where, you know, we'd be watching much music and these videos would come on. And,
yeah.
You know, hi, Mimi!
Yeah, we didn't... It's not like I went and sought out, like, Tattoo merch or something. I didn't buy a Tattoo album.
Yeah.
Girls handle fandom a bit differently than boys do. I think.
Yeah, I guess so.
We're a little more like, oh, he's so cute. I gotta have his shirts and his records and his posters. We're a little more like that.
Interesting fact. You know the whole, like, you know, Beatlemania, like the idea of the word mania being attached to the phenomenon of young women, you know, having a ravenous fandom over, you know, young male artists.
Mm-hmm.
And you usually think of that as, like, you associate that with the Beatles. Like, you know, that's the first, earliest instance I can think of hearing the word, you know, mania attached to, like, a band or an artist's name. Beatlemania, right? Mm-hmm. Do you know that that was actually coined as far back as 1840?
Mania?
Yeah, there was a, I'm going to look it up, but there was a Hungarian.
Beethoven Mania?
There was a Hungarian, I believe, pianist that young women just fangirled over hard in the 1840s because he was very beautiful.
And, before Bot Magazine.
Yeah.
He would have been a centerfold.
And now if I cannot remember, but it's something, it's, I don't know, it's like Fritz or something like that. It was like
Lists Fritz, Mania?
Fritz Mania or something like that.
Is it Lists?
Lists Mania. Lists Mania.
Yeah. Yeah, I know that.
I want to see pictures.
I wouldn't have expected that. You would think that, like, because teenagers weren't really a thing. Like, that wasn't a category of a young person. You were basically
Franz Liszt.
You were like a kid, and then you were an adult. You know, by the time you're like 13, they're like, "What are you still doing here? Get a job, join the workforce." Yeah. Everybody looked like they were like 63 when they were like 29.
So when you were 13, you immediately had to grow up and get a job.
Yeah,
so
it wasn't until
there was no 13 to 18 where you just lived off your parents and whined and bitched about how your life was so hard.
Yeah, it was basically baby boomers that invented the idea of the teenager, because they were the first people to have essentially what, you know, is a like an extended adolescence, where it's like, you know, in what was traditionally like, well, look at that, hottie.
Franz Liszt.
The ladies love Franz Liszt.
Lists-a-mania. Yeah.
Lists-a-mania. I mean, you know, see it. He looks a little bit like Gavin Rosdale.
His music slaps for sure.
He's got a part in the middle of his hair. It's about shoulder length. It's not quite as curly as Rosdale's, but
he does look like Gavin. Yeah.
He's got the, you know, he's got a similar chin, slightly larger nose.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But they could be cousins.
Yeah, Gavin had very, like, delicate features.
Delicate.
In those, Canada...
Those, what do they call brown eyes, bedroom eyes? Yeah, that was Gavin Rosdale.
In Canada, I would say the equivalent would be David Usher of Moist.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I feel like David Usher is a little more talented overall.
Yeah.
But there was definitely a ravenous fan base for that band based solely on how pretty the lead singer was.
So, like,
being moist all the time would be a problem.
Well, man, I went to a Moist concert once, and that's probably the closest. I've never gone to like a boy band concert. I've never gone to, you know, I don't know, Justin.
You're missing
Bieber.
Out, man. You're missing out.
I've gone to concerts where girls are definitely like whipped up in a bit of a frenzy, but it's usually usually balanced out with a bunch of like dudes, like, you know, like
with throwing their arms crossed
and stuff like that. Well, no. You know, like, I'm just saying, like, there's a balance of, it's a big band. People love them. Of course, girls get excited. Like Naomi's saying, you know, girls fandom is usually a little different than men's. But I've never been to one where it's like 99% young women, except for the time I went to a Moist concert. And every time David Usher sang a chorus, the entire place, and I think this was at the Shaw Center, whatever it was called at the time, but, you know, downtown. Mm-hmm. Shaw Conference Center. The ear piercing, like, shrill of just a concert hall filled with young women screaming, caterwauling, out of key at the top of their lungs. Go, hey, that's just a little tale. I was like, Jesus Christ, where am I?
It's rough, isn't it?
I mean, I'm sure it feels good to be the guy on stage.
Hey, we got some commentary.
Sure.
Tup Tim says, remember when you can see David Usher's abs in the Push music video?
Oh, yes, hi, baby.
Yes, Tup Tim, I remember. Yes, good call. Well,
so what about Gavin Rosdale, though? Like, yeah, you said he was... I remember him being
wet a lot. It was his brooding. His brooding.
I remember him being wet a lot.
Yeah, like in photo shoots and music videos. Oh, like, he was always wet.
He needs a towel, you know?
It was his broodingness that was really sexy. And it's like bedroom eyes and all of that. Like, it just got girls all excited. And I just remember thinking, man, he's fucking gorgeous. And then I let that get in the way of, I think at the time I knew that I didn't like that Razorblade Suitcase album nearly as much as I liked the first one. Mm. Like, I think I knew that, but I kept trying to listen to it over and over again to, oh, this will grow on me. This is going to be great because it's them. It's going to be great. Then I went to the concert. And that, oh. I kind of, I kind of lost interest after the concert because that's, I gotta say, in 30, how old am I now? Real old. About 30 years of concert going, that was the most boring show I've ever seen.
Was his hair dry? Is that the problem?
I think maybe he was a little dry. I was a little dry.
Not wet enough.
It left you dry. I'm really surprised.
Now, the best part of that concert was the opener, because the opener was Veruca Salt, who are a fantastic group.
Pretty sweet.
Yeah, I'd rather see Veruca Salt over
Had way Bush. More energy. They were way more exciting, really interacting with the crowd. They were fun. But then Bush just stood there. Like, they didn't do anything. They just stood there. They didn't even really try to interact with the crowd or anything. I just remember being really disappointed. And everything kind of just sounded like it did on the album. You know, they didn't take any risks or chances. And maybe part of the concert going experience is I like when they try to take a few risks, you know?
Or at least jam out, like, you know, hey, here's the part in Greedy Fly where we, you know, do the 3-minute drum solo.
That's
try
so
to
fun.
Connect. Try to connect with your audience somehow, you know? Like,
totally.
And it just wasn't there. And I felt like it was a waste of time and money. And I was just happy to have gotten a better, closer connection with Veruca Salt as a band in the end of it, to be honest. But I think after that, I kind of just lost interest in Bush.
Yeah,
okay, there was one concert that was worse. Matthew Good. But I digress.
Oh, well, yes.
I believe that.
I saw a terrible Matthew Good concert. I wasn't a fan anyway, but I definitely was not going to be a fan after I saw Matthew Good. Actually, I saw Cereal Joe and Matthew Good play on the same stage, and I think Cereal Joe probably put on a better show.
Yeah.
I mean, my friends were like, seriously, you dragged us over to the stage to see little kids do a Rage Against the Machine impression? But I was like, I mean, you got to give it to those little kids. They're kind of pulling it off. This is before Mistake.
They were entertaining. Mistake's a good song. I like
that. But this is pre-Mistake. This is when they were still doing rap rock.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. But I'm with you. Bands have been, my fandom for bands has been made or broken by live shows. And one of the worst live shows I ever saw in my life. And, you know, it was about time anyway, because this band was all going in a whole new direction and that I didn't like anyway, was Weezer. Weezer's one of the worst concerts I ever saw in my life. Up to the time I saw them, I was a huge fan. I was that guy like who had to buy every weird little single that they released. I went and got the Mallrats soundtrack just to get like the one Weezer song on there.
Was that Suzanne?
Yeah, that you couldn't get on any of the other albums or
it's
anything.
It's a pretty good
like
song,
that.
Though.
It's a great song. The first two Weezer albums, I think, still hold up.
Mm-hmm.
They're what I like about those albums too is that they are diverse enough, and they kind of take this, you know, alternative 90s grunge like ball and you know, like take it in a different direction until that flopped commercially, and then they just played it safe and just played the same three power chords over and over again. And Beverly Hills is probably one of the worst songs ever recorded.
I got a soft spot for it.
Dude, it's fucking awful.
We agree
but,
on
you know,
something.
I'll tell you about Beverly Hills. Here's one redeeming thing about Beverly Hills. If you had a young person trying to learn guitar for the first time and they were a Weezer fan, you could teach them to play that song in one session.
Yeah.
One session. It's just three power chords. Even the solo is like five notes. It's like bump, 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 ba-na-na-na. Bump, 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 ba-na-na-na. Anyway, terrible song. But I saw Weezer in concert. And it, same thing with you, Naomi. I was like, this band is not like, I get the staring at the floor thing, you know, but like
shoegaze?
This was sort of, you know, not the genre shoegaze, but like literally like shoegazing.
Okay.
But no, like this wasn't that. This was a band who seemed so disinterested to be there. They could care less. They didn't engage with the crowd at all. They looked like they were testing out, like, you know, like their stage setup. Like, it was early in their tour. Like, I think it was maybe even the first show for whatever reason in Edmonton. And it seemed like they spent more time talking to techs than they even did playing music and, like, engaging the audience. Like, there was a lot of downtime between songs where, like, somebody was always, like, talking to a stage, you know, like, tech about something. And they were probably working out lights and monitors and that sort of thing for the rest of the tour when they were going to be, you know, more fun for everybody else. I, like, killed it for me. I was like, well, I'll never be a Weezer fan ever again.
Smell and you then, later, Weezer.
And then they dropped the Green album, and I was like, whew, dodged that fucking bullet.
Yeah.
Actually, I think that coincided. I think I bought the Green album first. Then they launched the tour. But I was already like, I remember trying to justify to myself the Green album.
Yeah.
You know? And you being know like, I want to like this. I need to like this. This is Weezer. This is my favorite band. Or one of my favorite bands.
It's like being in a relationship. You want to tell yourself that everything's going to be okay because you love this person. Because you just love what they did so much, you're still in love with the person you fell in love with, but they've changed.
And sometimes so you just gotta let them go.
Break up with them because sometimes you just gotta let them go.
Let them go.
Sometimes you gotta let them go. Bush X, or well, I guess they let that go. But Bush, I feel like we just I think the world let like they apparently they've still been making records. Or at least Gavin Rossdale has.
Before when you were off screen earlier and we were talking, just hanging out with the Twitch crowd, I was saying that would be an interesting idea for a sub series. Is like you pick a band like someone like Bush or even someone like, you know, like a big rocker like Deep Purple or something like that. And you like listen to the, because they're still putting out music. I think the last Bush album was like in
2020. Yeah. So and I actually own a couple of their albums since Razorblade Suitcase. I do.
I have zero idea what that sounds like. And for a lot of bands like that, that maybe you like a specific time frame of their music, yeah. And then they just keep putting albums out, which, I mean, are musicians going to musish, right? That's for sure. But, like, once the magic's gone, you know, and the bloom is off the rose or so, what does that sound like? You know, that might be an idea for a future series.
Well, yeah. I mean, look, if we were to pick the record of any band that like derailed their career one way or the other, I don't know. Is this the album that did it for Bush? Like, what was the next album after this? Did it put out a bunch of singles? Did it hit the top 40?
The next album was the remix album, but I believe the one after that was The Science of Things. And I don't think that any massive hits, but it has like The Chemicals Between Us was the first single.
Okay.
So they were liked the song War Machine. War Machine was a cool track. Didn't do it
because I remember Chemicals Between Us, and I remember the sound changing up fairly significantly. Like they added some digital effects and whatnot.
At some point, I think like they lost their main lead guitar player, Nigel, I can't remember at what point that was. It might have been in the early 2000s, which probably made a sonic difference.
Yeah, I mean, I don't care to check out anymore. You know, like,
well, it doesn't necessarily need to be Bush, but I mean in general, right?
No, like, I know what you're saying. It'd be
I know Charlie's saying not the album that derailed the band, but what album do they sound like now?
You know,
to be surprised to being like, did you know Boston put out a record last year? I think most of those guys are dead, but like I'm just saying as an example.
Totally. What? I mean, Deep Purple is a pretty good band to like use as an example because I know they're still putting out
albums. And then you're like, there's one guy who joined the band like on their tour of their third record who he still gets the tour under the name, but there's nobody else in the band that's still like...
Right.
Yeah, that sort of thing. Because we started a little bit later tonight, we were chatting a little bit with some people earlier, and they made some points or had some questions, so I'm going to hit those up right now.
Oh, that's a good idea. Tup Tim, he wanted us to know that this is great content, and we should change our category to music or just chatting. Thank you for the tips.
Category, Charlie?
Tup Tim, if you like...
What is our category? Chatting,
what is our category? I thought it was music.
Is it in real life?
Isn't it on Twitch or...
Yeah, he's right. But thank you. We really appreciate that. We hope you subscribe to us. We do this weekly.
Well, that's some inside baseball. We got to go do some house cleaning. We'll get around to that. Thanks, for chiming in there.
We're just new on Twitch. Like, we've been doing this podcast for years, but like, we're just new on Twitch. So
I was gonna say, if you like just chatting, check out our first 100 episodes everywhere you get podcasts. Because that did not have much focus except for whatever we wanted to talk about that
Muppets,
day.
Muppets, malls, sex,
poop. Lots of poop.
And hey, and now you get that all on Patreon. Patreon.com/learning to listen. Okay, guys, focus. Okay, here we go.
I'll try.
So here's some points made in a chat we had earlier. Good ideas. Speaking of the album Razorblade Suitcase, I enjoyed it at the time, but it's super dated. I don't know. Did you guys find it was super dated? like, I guess the grunge aesthetic kind of made it dated, but the sound I heard, I was like, I could see a band putting out a record that sounded like that these days.
I wouldn't say it's that dated. No. Definitely stuff that sounds more dated than this.
Yeah, but I suppose like if you played this to someone who didn't know when it came out and was like, when would you think this came out?
Good question.
I feel like if you would ask me, I would have put it in the 90s. It sounds like
90s. Okay, what we need is like a Gen Z-er.
Yeah.
Who doesn't know what the 90s were like.
Oh yeah.
And just be They're like fun. Guess and see what they would say. But personally to me, I was like, nah, you know, I think this sound could have been earlier, could have been later. Like I don't think it sounded particularly dated. Not dated in the way like sometimes like an 80s album.
Well, you're like that synth or that keyboard, you know, keyboard strings, that's for sure a time.
Yeah, like when you put on a Flock of Seagulls album.
Oh yeah, which I do.
You know what decade and Hell what yeah. part of that decade that album came out.
And then you back that up with some Platinum Blonde. You got a party.
Okay. Here's another one. Clear attempt at expanding the three-chord approach. Greedy Fly as a departure from their format on the debut album. That's a fair point. I mean,
yeah, you throw in chord number four.
I think part of the problem, too, with this album is that Greedy Fly being one of the singles, and then it's a little more ambitious than the rest of the album is.
Mm.
So the album's kind of a letdown, you know, in that.
Yeah, Greedy Fly was a strong song, I thought. I don't.
Guitar rock wise, lyrics left me wanting.
I don't know why.
I can't put my finger on it.
But I liked it. I did. I think I liked the verses. The chorus annoys me a little bit. But the verses are good. And the pre-chorus is great. But the chorus is just kind of like boring. Good verse. Blah, 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 blah. That's all I have to say.
Here's another. Apparently, Gavin Ronsdale made a foray into acting at this point, and so I don't know, maybe this was a goal all along, and maybe that's why some of this
but did he do a vampire movie where he had a surfboard full of fucking, like, you know, weapons?
Did he?
I don't know. What did he do? I don't remember.
Why do you bring that up specifically?
I thought you guys were remembering from Bad Movie Club.
Oh,
another artist who tried to get into movies. Anyway,
who was it?
John Bon Jovi's Vampires.
Oh, yes.
Maybe you guys weren't there for that one.
No, I remember that one now. That's actually been a little while ago now.
But I do, like, what movies did Gavin Ronsdale make? I don't remember him. I don't remember him acting in anything. Did he do TV?
Let's go to Internet Movie Database.
Yeah.
Let's go to the tape.
We need fact checking Charity on the case.
I know. She'd be all over it.
And those are most of the points. I think we also, another thing that was brought up was the Bush X thing. We already talked about that. There was a band in Canada that was already called Bush. So when they tried to market Bush here in Canada, they had to rebrand as Bush X for legal reasons. I think that's been resolved, like you said, probably even as far back as maybe the third or fourth record at some point.
It was resolved really early, like in the late 90s to early 2000s.
Yeah, I do remember this album having an X on it and still calling this band Bush X at that point.
For sure.
And then this one says, also from a guitar nerd angle, their signature tone is boring as hell, bland and static. That's probably what dates it for me. So, like, I think that's commenting on what I was talking about before. And maybe if you were to listen to the original version and not the remastered version that I heard, I don't know what you guys listened to.
I listened to the remastered version as well.
Yeah, I actually found that maybe that's part of the reason I was like, no, this is fresh. I don't think it's fresh, but I just also don't think it sounds that dated. I think the guitar sounds pretty good. So maybe if I found the CD somewhere and put it on or whatever, maybe I'd hear a ton of compression and be like, yep, there he is. There's that dated 90s compressed guitar sound. You still hear, when you do hear guitar rock on the radio, you still hear a lot of compression, but it got real bad in the mid 90s, right up until like the 2010s. You still hear tons of it. Guitars just don't sound like guitars. They just sound like white noise, you know?
Sure.
Okay. Well, I don't know. Unless anybody else got anything else to chime in about this record, I guess it's about time that we wrapped it up. But
I can tell you a couple of movies that Gavin Rosdale's been in.
Oh, sure. Please do, Charlie.
He was in the 2005 movie Constantine, which is one that I've heard of. He also appeared in Zoolander.
Is that more of a cameo, though?
I think maybe more of a cameo.
Remember him in Constantine, but it wasn't a big role, right? It was like
he played the half demon Balthazar. I don't remember Constantine good enough to place that in this.
Keanu Reeves, based on the comic. Yeah. The big controversy at the time was that Keanu Reeves didn't dye his hair blonde.
Right. Yeah.
Constantine is famously a
long British bloke.
Yeah. Okay. Well, there you go, Gavin Rossdale. Two outings.
He's in a couple more, but those are the two big ones.
Those are the memorable ones.
Yeah.
So it didn't work. He went back to music and went back to being married to Gwen Stefani for a little while.
Sucks to be him.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, I don't know. He turned to the nanny at some point. So
this is more of a gossip.
Oh. Yeah, ooh, let's get into the TMZ portion of the show. No, what I want to talk about is how we wrap this little segment up, or this little mini series up. Is so, what did I call it? Is it cringe or does it crush?
Cringe or crush?
Cringe or crush? I'm gonna say, this for me has the most elements of cringe out of probably the three we've done, mostly because of Gavin Rossdale's lyrics. If anything makes me cringe, it's his lyrics, and I hate that. It doesn't crush by far. Am I going to put this on ever? No. If I had to pick one or two, if it's one or the other, I'm going to say cringe.
Okay.
Charlie, what do you think?
It's fierce mild. I think that's fierce mild. That's what
fair
I'm
to, fair to Midland,
fair to Midland, what fierce mild. You know, if one of those songs comes on a radio, on a satellite radio station or something like that, I'm not jumping to turn it off, but I'm also not really searching for it. I don't think,
yeah, but what radio station are you listening to that this comes on? Like, we've got the Lithium station on all the
it's
time.
Not, probably not Lithium.
No,
I would
never.
Say Lithium's the closest, but
90s on 90.
You might hear Machine Head.
Yeah, 90s on 9.
Oh, yeah.
You're going to hear one or two of those songs, maybe Swallowed, but not. I've never heard Greedy Fly on there for sure. So I'm not turning it, but also, yeah, it's a rare occurrence that it's going to show up. You know?
Okay, well, Naomi, this was your pick, so you have the final word on the album.
I will say that it was difficult to choose an album that's actually I had been turned off of, because something I had mentioned earlier is that I pretty much, when I like something, I pretty much like it for life, even if it's not relevant anymore. I'll still like turn it on and jam to it for the most part. This one, it kind of made me think about the real reasons why I liked Bush and whatnot, and I had to say that I really didn't enjoy sitting through the album. I liked the couple singles, maybe a third song, and that was Straight No Chaser was cool, but I would skip through all the rest of it. I wouldn't listen to it.
Yeah, well, there you have it. You know, you made me think of something. Steve-O of Jackass fame, of all people, made this point in a podcast I was listening to earlier. And he was like, he said it like this, but I'm not going to talk like that for for the next couple minutes. But he made a point about how music, it goes into like your mental hard drive in a way that it helps you store, you know, memories of it, like a time, a place, a feeling. And if anything's like this little run through of a few songs, and even just what we've been doing all together up to this point, has helped me realize is that, yeah, you know, even if something holds up or doesn't hold up, you're going to have such visceral memories attached to like a sound, an album, a song, a band or whatever. In
moments,
this case, it feels like maybe...
life.
Yeah, it's like, you know, if you brought up an album, I'll bet you I could tell you, like, you know, maybe not specifically when and where I heard it, but I could tell you, like, oh, what grade I was in, you know, who I was hanging out with, you know, like, just generally things about my life at the time. It's, you know, it's so much stuff, and all that stuff comes back. And, you know, in a case like this where you're like, oh, you saw the band live and you were really, really let down, you must attach some memory of that.
I remember who I went to the show with. I remember where I was living with, who my friends were at the time, that we were hanging out constantly, where I was working. It brings back the... when I think about this album, it brings back all of that more so than the music itself.
Yeah. So, you know, maybe there's some value in the music, even if it doesn't necessarily hold up in a way that's like, you know, like when it comes to like discerning critical, like, analysis.
Right.
But there's still some value to it in a nostalgia kind of way, you know, where... Yeah. Where you can go like, oh, man, you know, I don't know. Like, hearing the Beach Boys will always make me think about riding around in my dad's, like, Dodge Dart, you know, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I mean, so, you know, maybe it all has value. Maybe we don't need to, you know, like.
I remember my roommate's cat puking on my Bush tour book.
See, those are the memories, the golden, valuable memories I'm talking about.
That cat knew what it was doing.
Yeah, that cat was a bigger critic.
That cat knew.
That cat should have, yeah, you should have listened to that cat.
That cat's got taste, man.
Yeah, it tastes that.
Like in the way that cats do that too.
Oh yeah, the big buildup. I came home and it was all like warped with the puke, and I'm like, oh fuck. Then now I know that cat was doing me a favor.
Everyone's a critic.
Yeah.
Love that cat.
Well, give that cat a column in the local college rag, because that's all you would have had to have written up for Razor Blade case.
409.
Okay, guys. Well, all right. Thanks for joining us today. That was a lot of fun. This has been a fun little mini series. Maybe we'll do it again. I don't know if we'll do
you know what
topic or not. Or
I really feel like we just wrapped it up there nicely. The three episode arc with that little thing that you just said there. That was real nice.
Yeah, well, I was kind of trying to do that, Charlie.
That's real good. You did a good job. I'm just telling you, you did a good job.
What, the cat puking sound?
Thank you.
Yeah.
with the cat puking. So, yeah, like I was mentioning earlier, I think Naomi's going to be moving soon, so you might miss her on an episode here coming up. But Charlie and I, we're going to do something fun, I think. I think we got a special little episode coming up.
Nice.
Exciting.
I just noticed that somebody used our Patreon account to subscribe to some stuff. So
yeah, I did. I did.
That comes up in my notifications, too.
You guys, check it out. They're good ones. Check them out.
Well, that's where our Patreon money is going, Charlie.
$4. I will pay that. That's fine.
No, you don't have to.
Do they subscribe to us?
No.
Well, then. Look at a bullshit. No, just kidding.
No,
follow for follow.
Follow for follow.
No, what we need is we need people to go to patreon.com/learningtolisten. That's where you can hear all the stuff early, bonus, all the extras. Yeah, and that's where you can keep Charlie in his subscriptions to Mashup Artists and Arby's Horsey Sauce. You got to help the guy out. He's got a problem.
Oh, man, that's
living. He can get free packets.
Like living. Right there.
Free packets.
Should we start a fast food restaurant called Mashups?
Mashups? And it's all just like stuff that's mashed up. That's
it. It's just like those, mashed potato bowls at KFC.
All the potatoes.
Yeah. Patreon.com/learningtolisten. And of course, you can follow us on all the social media if you want to put your two cents in it about anything. Just hit us up. We got a website for that. Charlie, what is it?
Just go to L2LPodcast.com.
Yeah, that's where you can, it's your one-stop shop for all the social medias. Follow, subscribe, do whatever you got to do. Find the platform that you want to hear us on. Subscribe to Twitch. You know, we're going to be doing this more regularly, hopefully, going forward. So, you know,
follow us on Twitch if you really like us. Subscribe.
Yeah. Yeah, and you can call us, by the way. Naomi, apparently we have a phone number. Do you know what it is?
We have a phone number, and you can leave us a voicemail and tell us what you love, what you hate, what you want to see. And we might even play your voicemail on the show, right, boys?
Maybe.
780-851-8785. Long-distance charges may apply.
Ooh, I didn't even think about that. I forgot long-distance was a thing. Okay, well, now that that's all out of the way, what do you guys got going on that you want to plug, Charlie?
Well, hey, if you like this show, maybe you want to get some merch. You want to get some sweet merch like back in the day when you used to go to, you know, Gavin Rossdale Mania and get all the t-shirts. You got to get all the, you know, the action figures, everything like that. But you like this podcast and you want to L2L Mania, just go to oldmandesign.com and we got shirts, we got mugs, we got a couple different things up there. You can, you know, fill your boots. We don't have boots. You have to get your own boots. But you fill them with the merch that we have up there. L2L podcast stuff, you know, oldmandesign.com.
Right on. I think that you can also get to that stuff through the L2Lpodcast.com links. Naomi, what about you? What do you got going on?
I've got another podcast that's a traitor to this podcast called Dope Nostalgia. And we talk with artists from the 90s and we talk about artists from the 90s. So my guest coming up this week is a young gentleman who was not even born yet in the 90s, but he is a huge fan and a collector of all good 90s rarities. And we're going to be talking about an artist him and I both like that a lot of people don't know about. And her name was Anna. It's going to be good.
See, that's the Gen Zer thing I'm talking about. We need one of those on board to remind us that we're old,
a millennial.
And irrelevant.
We got a millennial who's going to... he just eats this up. He loves that genre. So
I don't think that's even millennial. That's got to be Gen Z, right? You have still to have been born in the at least the
80s. I would say
80s.
That this kid's probably maybe 20.
I'm pretty sure that's Gen Z.
Oh, okay. Well, I thought that was a millennial, but what do I know?
I think the millennial cutoff is like 96.
He's pretty young.
He's a baby. He's
very
a
cool.
wee lad.
Very
so
cool.
He's actually...
He has his own like blog, music blog about the 80s and 90s stuff that he really likes and... That's his wheelhouse and
cool.
Kudos. Yeah, right it's on. Cool to have someone on there that's that young, enjoys it.
Cool. Well, yeah, we're irrelevant, we're old, we're dinosaurs, so we need new young blood to tell us what's actually cool and that we're out of touch. thanks again, everybody, for listening. Thanks for hanging out on Twitch. Thanks for chatting with us. Thanks for following on social media. Thanks for subscribing to our Patreon. You guys are the best. We love you very much. We want to hear from you, so reach out. And that's it for the whole show. So I don't know, guys, I don't have anything else to say because maybe I'll just make up some gobbledygook like Gavin Rosdale and that'll wrap up the whole show. So, okay, off the top of my head, I'm just swinging for the fences here. I got a green car. It's a car and it's going to leave. I see. I can't even do it as badly as he does. That's about something.
See, but he's trying to do it, right? Like he's got a formula in his head. You just don't know what it is. That's all.
I don't know. All right, this session, wrap it up.
Yeah. The music was fun,
yeah.
And then it got really dark for a while, a little bit anti-establishment.
But the next thing you knew, it was totally fun again.
So many artists came and went and left us wondering, what are they doing now? This podcast isn't about the heavy hitters who are still making millions. It's about everyone else, the ones whose careers didn't really leave that decade and kind of just still live in our memory.
So you mean Vanilla Ice had another song?
We all know what happened to Marky Mark. But what about the Funky Bunch? Who were the KLF? And why did Tammy Wynette record a song with an electro dance band that topped the charts? Two genres that specifically defined the 90s. What were freestyle and New Jack Swing all about? Did you know that Blossom star Joey Lawrence had a huge pop hit? Or that Alanis Morissette had a really hot pop career in Canada before Jagged Little Pill? Special guests will also be joining me to discuss the great era of glitter, grunge, thin eyebrows, hammer pants, and total ridiculousness. We're even setting up some interviews with some of the musicians that define the times.
Okay, so if you're older than 30, you might be sitting here going, man, I totally remember that song, but I have no idea who does that. Well, then you better listen and find out.
I'm Naomi Carmack, host of the ultimate 90s podcast, Dope Nostalgia. You're going to be busting the move again, coming in early 2020. You want to follow us so that you know when we go live? Check out our Twitter at NostalgiaDope. Or you can find us on Instagram at dope_nostalgia. If you've got a question or you just want to be on the show, email us at dopenostalgiapodcast@gmail.com.